You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Colt Molesky. And you can find all of my content either on the Fan Break site. You can go to zonecoverage.com. You can follow me on Twitter. Let me know how you like the episode, what I can do better, what you liked about it. And we're going to be talking about the Houston Rockets. And for that, I have a special guest on today. He is something of a Rockets connoisseur. He hosts the Locked On Rockets podcast. Ben DuBose, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Colton. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. I am all hyped up for this game. It's game day. You got to get excited about the Rockets and the Timberwolves. It looks like some of the best teams in the West right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think you've noticed it as well with some of the issues that are going on with the Spurs, the toughest schedule the rest of the way, and the Kawhi Leonard injury. There's a good shot that these end up being the number two and number three teams in the West, which, you know, besides playing four times in the regular season, it's a team you're potentially looking at playing down the road and maybe the second round of the playoffs as well.
Yeah, it's an exciting game regardless, but also the scenarios coming into this game are fascinating just because James Harden is going to be back finally after a long hiatus with some lower body injuries, and then you have some suspensions on top of that because of a fight that happened in the Clippers game and what happened afterwards with the locker room scenario. We're going to get into all of that, and we're going to break down this game. Very exciting game. I wanted to get to that right away, though. How do you feel like you're lucky with the suspensions they got? Trevor Ariza and Gerald Green are both out for two games, but that's it. And Harden and Clint Capella and Chris Paul were all involved in that, it sounded like. But to escape with two players suspended, do you feel like you got a little lucky there?
Not with what's come out. It's one of those things, the narrative was ahead of the truth. There's been a lot, if you read the reports yesterday, that you know, even the Clippers agreed that Paul and Harden were kind of peacemakers in this. And with Clint, as it turned out, the guy who was at the front door was actually Tarik Black, not Clint Capella. I think, you know, someone just saw a very tall guy that had to be a center and guessed it was Clint. I was told yesterday that Clint was actually in a different part. He was in the quote-unquote secret hallway, which it turns out wasn't that secret, just looking for some food. But, you know, it makes a lot more sense that Ariza was the guy that was leading it because he was the guy that was most chippy in the game. He and Griffin got ejected with a minute left. So it makes sense that he was the aggressor in the situation. And you can also see that Chris Paul and James Harden, the veteran leaders of the team, are the guys who would be most likely successful in defusing the situation. So relative to what it sounded like Monday night, I guess, you know, you consider it lucky. But in terms of what actually happened, I think it's one of those things. It was so funny to see some of the reports, albeit inaccurate, that came out. And the truth is that it wasn't really as sexy as some of the initial characterizations made it seem. You know, there wasn't any Clint Capella diversion. There wasn't any, you know, secret passageway. It's just a matter of, you know, Ariza looking for Blake Griffin after the game, being a little upset, not really that different than what you see, for example, Kyle Lowry and Ben Simmons had a similar incident.
I was thinking earlier about that.
Yeah, and of course you guys have seen what happened in the Orlando game with Aaron Aflalo. You know, there's been a lot of these lately. I don't know where it came. So I would say from the Rockets standpoint, you know, I don't think anybody's upset about the suspensions because truth be told, no matter what you say, you know, you shouldn't go into the other team's locker room. And Trevor and Gerald, if they were the aggressors, they have to pay the price for that. The Rockets are a little missed that Blake Griffin did not get any discipline for what people there, including Mike D'Antoni, think was definitely an intentional bump. But that's one of those things that that's neither here nor there because that's a Clippers issue rather than, you know, about tonight's Rockets-Timberwolves matchup or even the Rockets-Warriors on Saturday. So I would say the Rockets, as far as their discipline, you know, they're not really, you know, other than, of course, they'll miss those two guys on the floor, they're not really that missed about the situation. I think they recognize the NBA had to do something. There's just a little bit, I would say, of just residual bitterness towards the league office for not really handling the Blake Griffin angle the way they wanted to. But that's about the only thing that I think the Rockets are upset by in this.
Well, I was watching every drop of that game the other night, and the friction between these two teams, it was fun to see, because I think you had that when Chris Paul was on the Warriors, but it was a little more lopsided. Cause
the Clippers, you mean?
Yeah, the Clippers had that against the Warriors, and he was there was never really the back and forth of the Clippers actually beating the Warriors. So it's fun to have a rivalry where it seems like the teams are a little closer. Now, granted, Harden was out of this game. I realize that. But still, it was chippy. It was a good back and forth game. It was a fun, exciting matchup for what was happening in between the shots and what was happening when the basketball was actually getting played. So I don't know. I think it's not necessarily good to have guys fighting and maybe chasing each other down in locker rooms afterwards, but it is fun to have rivalries in the NBA.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I took out of it as well. You know, the after stuff, I know the NBA feels like they need to come down hard on that, but overall, you know, the chippiness is good. I don't mind games getting a little, you know, we mentioned the other games this week, including you guys, Minnesota and Orlando. You know, there are certain lines you can't cross. But by and large, you know, when people care that much and the games get that heated, that makes it more fun for everybody. You know, you want to see that the players are engaged. And if nothing else, you know, when you have incidents like this, it reminds you that, you know, hey, these guys are competitors. They want to go out there and win. So, yeah, it's hard for me to be very upset about it.
Except for if you're Aaron Aflalo. That was a vicious attack on Bielitsa.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
I might be a little biased, but I'm definitely taking Bielitsa's side on that one. He was just defending himself. That was a haymaker thrown at an innocent player.
That's what I mean. Like, there are certain lines you can't cross, you know, such as the Rockets. You know, you can't go into the locker room, you know, even if the other team is trying to provoke you. And, you know, certainly, you know, you can't try and throw a haymaker like that. But yeah, there are lines you can't cross, but just in general, yeah, the intensity is, you know, entertaining to watch. For you're not going to see me be one of those guys that act holier than thou about it. You know, it's enjoyable. It's a good watch. You just got to make sure you don't cross those lines, as certainly Aaron Aflalo did in that Orlando game.
So the basketball side of it, obviously James Harden coming back is a huge boost for the offense of the Rockets. Is there any worry that maybe Ariza and Green out affects the offense a little bit? Is there any thinking that there might be controlled minutes for James Harden coming back from the injury in this game? What's the thing, just basketball side, of what these suspensions mean for the Timberwolves-Rockets matchup tonight?
Yeah, I think James D'Antoni said this morning in shoot-around he's going to be limited to about 25 minutes, which is about the standard for guys coming off. Okay. You know, layoffs like that, you're not going to have somebody that hadn't played in 2.5 weeks and then throw them into, you know, 35-plus starters minutes per night. And that's even for the Rockets. One thing that's kind of a common theme between, you know, these two teams, of course, Thibodeau and D'Antoni have wildly different styles, but they each are known for riding their starters a little heavily more than some, you know, more new-age minutes managers would do it. But with James, you know, the face of the franchise coming off 2.5 weeks and, you know, a hamstring injury, that's the kind of thing that can definitely be re-aggravated. I don't think that they're going to push it. You might see him get to upper 20s if he's feeling really good, but you're not going to see him play 35 to 40. I don't think that's reasonable at all. You're definitely going to miss Ariza and Green. Now, Green in particular has kind of struggled the last couple of weeks, but he's the kind of guy, he gives you a dimension. If he gets hot on a given night, then he's able to put up 15 or 20 points in a heartbeat. So it's one of those, he could shoot you out of games, but he gives you also kind of an upside potential that's not there. And then with Ariza, he's their rock. Ariza is a guy, and in this matchup, of course, you know, Minnesota's got lots of perimeter playmaking, Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins. So this is a game where you would think that Ariza going into it would play 40 minutes because he's the kind of long defender you need against guys like that for Minnesota. So they're going to miss him. They did get Luke Bamute back on Monday, but he's missed over a month with a dislocated shoulder. He got a little bit better as the game went along on Monday, kind of knocked the rust off. But that's going to be the theme to watch is, you know, Luke Bamute, is he capable? He's going to be the guy filling Ariza's spot in the starting lineup. And I would assume, you know, covering Jimmy Butler, Wiggins at times, whoever the dominant playmaker is for the Timberwolves at a given point in the game. And so that's going to be the theme to watch is, you know, how much can Luke Bamute pick up the slack for Trevor Ariza when it comes to your top defense on the perimeter?
Yeah, and I went right to offense, but you're right. The defensive side is where this could make maybe the biggest impact, and hopefully you see Wiggins or Butler take advantage of this and then kind of alleviate some pressure on a guy like Teague, who's probably going to be up against Chris Paul a lot of the time. You don't expect him to do a ton because of that defensive matchup there.
Yeah, and And I want to turn it the other way, too, because in the past, the Rockets do get James Harden back, and that's certainly a good development. Andrew Wiggins, it's been a, you know, an up and down season in terms of just the overall assessment of his level of play. But in the past, Wiggins has given Harden some problems. I'm sure you remember that as well. For all you can say about Andrew Wiggins, he is very long, he is very athletic, and in the past, those are the types of guys, and Wiggins in particular, that give Harden problems from time to time in the half-court sets. Now, with Chris Paul here, it's a little different for the Rockets this year because not everything is Harden-centric. You can't just key in on Harden as the only guy that can create in these half-court sets because there's Chris Paul there to initiate as well. So maybe that helps. But in the past, Wiggins has been tough for James, and so that's what I want to see. With James coming off a knee injury, it's going to be interesting to see just how effective he is, just how springy. And the other thing I'm looking for with the Rockets is to see, you know, just how much the presence of Chris Paul, you know, having another playmaker on the other side of the floor, does that potentially, you know, alleviate some of the pressure that Minnesota can put on Harden? Because in the past, you know, I'm sure you've watched a lot of these games, Rockets Timberwolves in the past too. Andrew Wiggins has given James some problems from time to time just with his overall length and athleticism.
No, yeah, to that point, too, not only has he given him problems in the past, but Wiggins' defense, you can say what you want about his offense, but his defense over the last, especially 2 months, has really progressed nicely. He's making a lot less mistakes and mental errors, and he's playing better in his spot and not really trying to overextend himself. So that'll be a great matchup on the defensive side, because I think not only has Wiggins done well against him before, but his defense has actually gotten better over the last couple of months. And so I think the advantage is slated a little bit towards Wiggins' favor, just because you do have Harden coming off that injury.
Yeah, and then the other matchup to this, and now certainly Harden's the better player, but it's one of those things, can Andrew Wiggins be a better defender than the typical guy against James? Potentially, yes. And so that's where, if you're a Rockets fan, you have to hope that Chris Paul's presence, as I said, alleviates some of that pressure so that you don't have Wiggins, the help, able to 100% key in on James the way they have in the past. The other thing to watch is in the middle. Of course, Karl-Anthony Towns for Minnesota and Clint Capela for the Rockets. It's been a huge breakthrough year for Clint Capela, averaging over 14 and 11 per game in 26 minutes, two blocks in there, remarkably efficient. And the thing is, with Clint Capela, he's 23 years old. For the Rockets, it's been a slow and steady process through his first 4 years of continuing to build strength, because he came into the league as such an athlete, such a rim runner, but there's kind of a delicate balance of that, you know, you want him to gain strength, you want him to get stronger on the low block. With Karl-Anthony Towns as kind of the prototype guy, you need Clint to be stronger to defend in the post. But the flip side, if you gain too much weight too quickly, it's going to compromise your athleticism. So with Clint, it's been a slow and steady process, you know, trying to gain, I'd say, 5 to 10 pounds a year of muscle and just kind of slowly add it on so that you're, you know, keeping most of that athleticism that makes him elite. And now in year four, now at 23, it seems to be kind of paying off. And so there's been a theme for Clint this year. A lot of the guys he struggled with in the past have been your more physical centers, your more traditional types that can take you down on the low block. In the past, that's given them some issues. This year, he's been a lot better, especially the last month. Steven Adams, Robin Lopez, Tyson Chandler, those are some of your more physical, plodding types. And Clint's played really well against them. Karl-Anthony Towns, of course, is another thing altogether in terms of his overall diversity of skill set. Maybe not as defensively dominant as some of those guys, but certainly offensively. You're going to have a guy who scores 20 a night to go with his 12 rebounds, very strong. So it's one of those, you know, everybody knows how dominant Karl-Anthony Towns is. With Capela, he's still getting there. It's been an encouraging start to the year. So I think there's going to be a spotlight on just how much Clint has developed, because, yeah, when you go up against Towns, that's one of, you know, especially on defense, when you're on the low block against him, that's one of the biggest challenges you'll find in the NBA when it comes to opposing big men.
We're going to keep breaking down the matchups in the Rockets game after a quick break for our sponsors. Looking at the Towns-Capela matchup, I really want to see Towns playing the post more and getting the post. He only had, it was 13 shots, I believe, against the Magic the other night. I want to see him take more like 18 to 20 in this one would be just fine with me. If you're looking at Capela, does he is a successful night just holding Towns to like 15 like he had against the Orlando Magic?
I think so, but I think more than that, it's less about the raw total for Towns, and it's more about, well, certainly staying on the court, not getting into foul trouble, but it's about not letting the other guys get involved. Can Clint hold his own enough to where you're not giving up open looks for Jimmy Butler or for Andrew Wiggins, for Teague, Taj Gibson, whoever it may be? I think that's the bigger factor, is Clint staying on the floor and then being tough enough on that low block to where, I'm not going to say you never double, because you know, when you're a 20-12 machine like Karl Anthony Towns, of course everybody's going to double, you know, on certain possessions, certain sequences. But I think for the Rockets, the key is that can you defend without letting any of those guys individually be so dominant that it lets you get open shots for all the other guys? Because on Monday against the Clippers, and of course the Rockets didn't have their full cast of characters, there were far too many open looks. The Clippers aren't really that great of a three-point shooting team, but they shot 40-plus percent from the game. So I think it's less about talents individually and more about you know, the collective team defense, making sure that you don't give up the looks that you did the other night. And for the Rockets, like I said, it kind of goes back a little bit to hoping that Luke Bamute in night two of his return is a little less rusty, especially on the mental side, and a little more crisp in terms of knowing his assignments after that long layoff.
Yeah, and two, if you're the Timberwolves, you're hoping that, because obviously Wiggins isn't as good of a player as James Harden, but it's a win. It's kind of like in that Curry category, where if you hold James Harden to 14 points, that's a victory. Then you essentially beat him, just because you kind of expect him almost to go off for 30. So holding them to 14 is a huge win. The defense of the Timberwolves, especially on the perimeter, will be huge. On the flip side, the Timberwolves have been sporadic from the 3-point line, and they have had some games like against the Cavaliers where they shot really well from outside, and then against the Magic or the Nets, they've shot really poorly. I think they elevate their play when they're playing really solid opponents, and so that's the advantage for them in this game. How big will the defense of the Rockets be on the perimeter, just kind of in deciding this game early? Like in the first couple quarters, if you're able to hold the Timberwolves to only a couple made 3-pointers in that game, will that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game?
Yeah, I think so. And it goes back to what we were saying with the Karl Anthony Towns scenario and how you defend the low block, in that, you know, if you don't have to double that much, then in theory you're not giving up that many open looks for guys like Teague, for Jimmy Butler, for everyone else. So I think that's where it all goes back to, because the Rockets with James Harden and Chris Paul, they should have more overall scoring than the Minnesotas on a nightly basis. There's a little more explosion to the Rockets offense, but yes, if you're not able to hold down Karl Anthony Towns on the low block, and then you start getting those threes because the perimeter guys feel the need to help, then that's going to be a big problem. For the Rockets, the other thing to look at for Houston defensively, it's been a very kind of up and down season for the Rockets, the power forward spot. And of course you're looking at Taj Gibson for a lot of the time for Minnesota, and he's a kind of physical guy. At times in the playoffs last year when he was local in the city, he did give the Rockets some problems. And the reason is, since about early December, Ryan Anderson and PJ Tucker have been in an absolute shooting funk, shooting in the mid-20s in terms of their three-point percentage, 30s overall, and just entirely too cold. And in some situations, it's let them slip on the defensive end as well. One of those things where, you know, if you're not making shots, then it kind of takes a toll on your effort a little bit in some other phases. Now, the good news, over the past week, both of those guys have started to perk up a little bit. I think Tucker, in particular, against Minnesota, you know, the Timberwolves are kind of old school. When you look at guys like Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, Taj Gibson, those are your more traditional, I don't want to say plotting, but they'll play physical. They'll muck it up. And so that's kind of the matchup that Houston brought in P.J. Tucker for, to make them a little tougher. Because last year this was known as a team, you know, they had the pace and space, they had the shooting, they felt like they wanted to get more defensive versatility. But in addition to more defensive versatility, they wanted to get a little nastier. And that's kind of what they were bringing P.J. Tucker to do. So I think, you know, they'll start Ryan Anderson because he's their starter. They'll see how it goes. But if he's missing his shots, or if Taj Gibson gets his way, then you may see a heavy dose of P.J. Tucker in this game. And defensively, you know, I think he'll fit well. I think he's the kind of guy that's physical. He can play with range, that, you know, you put him up against Taj Gibson, or really, you know, if the Timberwolves go small, any of those perimeter guys, and he should fit well. The question is, does PJ make enough shots on the offensive end to where you can justify playing him, you know, 30, 35 minutes? So I think that's going to be the key to watch from the Rockets' perspective. You know, they have some defensive options that they can throw in there that I think will do well. It's just a matter of when you look at Mute, PJ Tucker, are they shooting well enough to justify their presence for, you know, 35 minutes or so? And that's where you might miss Trevor Ariza, because generally Ariza and to a lesser extent Gerald Green, nobody's going to think that Gerald Green's a great defender, but he's at least long and active. You know, those guys shoot well enough that opposing defenses always have to respect them. That's not always the case with Bob Mute and Tucker. Now, can they defend? Yes, they can defend really well, but the question is going to be, you know, can they shoot well enough to stay on the floor for a while? So that, to me, is the thing to watch from a Rockets perspective. They've got the personnel to throw it at Minnesota defensively. It's just a matter whether they make enough threes for it to be worthwhile to play them major minutes on the other end.
For sure. We're going to have one quick more word for our sponsors before we finish out the episode. Before we head out here, I'm looking at the Timberwolves. I'm looking at Jimmy Butler and Jamal Crawford, specifically to shoot and add range to the Timberwolves. I think you're going to need a stretch from Jamal Crawford where he knocks down three or four three-pointers in this game to kind of get the Timberwolves back into it. If you're looking at Eric Gordon and Chris Paul, are those the guys who kind of have to make up for the offensive woes of some of these guys that they have to play because their defense needs the help?
Yeah, and I would say Gordon in particular. The theme for the Rockets, Eric Gordon's had a good year all around. His three-point stroke is not what it should be, but overall, I mean, he's played extremely well. But it's kind of been a tale. He's been at his best when either James Harden or Chris Paul has been out. You know, Harden and Paul, they've both been dominant, you know, no matter which of the others on the floor. I mean, these are two of the top 10 players in the league. They're both extremely good. With Gordon, he's not that he's been bad when he's been the number three option, but he just has not been nearly as impactful just on an overall possession-to-possession basis. So I think for the Rockets, like bigger picture, if they want to actually compete with the Warriors in the playoffs, then you need Eric Gordon to get comfortable in that number three role. And so that's what's going to be fascinating to watch, because these past couple of weeks, Eric has generally been very good, but again, that's because James Harden is out, and Eric has slid into that number three, or that number two role, excuse me, and where he's gotten the ball more. So now that Eric is going to be, you know, the number three with James Harden and Chris Paul in there, can he make shots? Can he do the things off the ball to be a difference maker? I think he can. The tools are certainly there in his toolbox. You know, he can be an elite three-point shooter. I think he's like career 38%. He won the three-point shootout last year. But yeah, I think that's going to be the thing to watch, is that if he slides into that number three role, can he get comfortable enough to be better than he was earlier this year when Chris and James played? And, you know, again, it's not that he was bad. He just wasn't at his, you know, usual crisp level of efficiency. And then, yeah, for the other side, Colton, man, Jamal Crawford, the years that he was in Los Angeles, I think Rockets fans shudder when they hear that name, because he has owned the Rockets for years, especially in that building. You know, it feels like some of the threes that he'll put up there, you know, he can make those until he's 50. So I think certainly that's a big X factor. For whatever reason, he certainly seems to see it well in Toyota Center, and it's one of those, you know, I'm looking at his stat line. It's not like he's had a fantastic year, but anytime he gets into this gym in Houston, it seems like he's able to flip the switch and be really good. So I would agree with you that, you know, certainly for this matchup, but, the remaining three in the regular season and a potential playoff series, yeah, that's one of those. I think the Rockets, whenever they see him, they're going to be very aware of where Jamal Crawford is at all times.
Well, if you look at the raw statistics, he hasn't exploded off the page, but I was going through and grading on an episode earlier every player on the roster, and Jamal Crawford deserves an A grade, because there's probably 5-6 games where if he doesn't score 20 points and just go crazy from outside, they lose the game by 8-10 points. And so he doesn't have a great game every single time, but when he needs to step up, he steps up in a really big way. And like you're saying, he's comfortable against the Rockets. I feel like this is a scenario where he can put up 18-22 points, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, and it wouldn't shock me at all, because he's the kind of, you know, if there's one thing for Minnesota, it's, and this is more than just tonight, this is just a general theme, it's that you've really changed the culture from the standpoint of going with a team that you know, was well out of the playoff picture last year to all of a sudden being, I would say at this point, the favorite, given the San Antonio issues we mentioned earlier, to be the West number three seed. So, you know, all of that is good because the talent is really strong, but there is such a thing as learning how to win, especially for some of these guys like Karl-Anthony Towns, like Andrew Wiggins, that have not had a lot of success at the NBA level. And so when you go up against a team like Houston, that's definitely the second best team in the West, both now and going forward, it's the kind of game where Houston, you know, they're more secure in who they are. They're led by James Harden and Chris Paul, guys that have been around the block a million times. For the Timberwolves, there are going to be some moments where their inexperience against a team like the Rockets stands out. So I think Jamal Crawford, a guy who has been there, done that, played in a lot of big games, that's kind of the X factor that I think for the Timberwolves to win this game or succeeding at the Rockets down the line. I don't know that you necessarily have to have him score 18 or 22, but you're going to just need certain stretches where, you know, he takes over a game for a minute or two to keep you in it. Because I think with this matchup, you know, the Timberwolves certainly talent-wise can win this game. They can compete with anybody. It's an extremely talented roster. There's just still a certain building component, learning how to win at the highest level. And so, yeah, that's why I'm right there with you. I think Jamal Crawford's an X factor. He's the guy, not just tonight, but down the road in any Rockets-Timberwolves matchup. He might be that kind of experienced guy, along with, of course, Jeff Teague, Jimmy Butler. They've got some of that as well, mm-hmm. to offset some of the potential growing pains that guys like Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins might have when the competition really kind of ratchets up a notch against your upper echelon teams, which certainly the Rockets are.
Yeah, and I think, too, you saw a little bit, I feel like the Timberwolves are really going to get up for this game. You saw afterwards the Butler saying that they need to lose the Magic, the game against the Magic. I just think that maybe they were getting a little cocky and maybe getting a little ahead of their skis on that five-game streak against some really good teams at home, and now they took a bad loss to the Magic, and they're going to really get up for a big game against the Rockets on the road.
Yeah, and that's the prototypical sign of a young team in that, you know, they're able to dominate or at the very least play well when the stakes are high, and then you have a game like the Orlando one where the spotlight's off and then you have a lull in effort. So in general, I think the intensity is going to be better just based on national TV, the nature of the opponent. I agree with that, but they're just going to be, you know, you want to have the whole game where you need the effort to pick up, but yeah, you're just going to have certain stretches where I think maybe the experience of the Rockets stands out, and then that's when you need to lean on your veterans to kind of not get rattled, to pull you through. So yeah, those guys you mentioned, Jimmy, Jeff, Jamal, those are guys that I think that the Wolves are going to need to lean heavily on in these Rockets matchups to kind of, you know, keep them in striking distance when the Rockets go on one of their patented runs.
He is the host of the Locked On Rockets. Ben, I know you're a busy man. Thanks for squeaking us in this morning.
Sure thing. Thank you, Colton.
You take care of yourself. This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.